Hello, everyone. My name is Michael Palermo. I'm a developer evangelist based out of Phoenix, Arizona. And I am so excited to be sharing with you what I think is one of the coolest in the series on Windows 8 development, and that's what HTML developers need to know about coding Windows 8 Metro-style apps. And on the screen right now, you can see my Twitter alias and also my website. If you'd like to keep in touch. Also, if we have time at the end of this webcast, I'm going to look and see if there's any questions that have been queued. If we have time, we're going to tackle those. So this entire webcast, for the most part, is going to be a demonstration of how you can get started, and I wanted to make it as simple as possible and also talk about maybe some of the myths that some might have with regard to using JavaScript, HTML, and CSS to do their Windows 8 app development. So to get started, I'm going to press the Start key on my keyboard, and that's going to take me to the Start screen for Windows 8. And there's a couple options that I have if I want to open up Visual Studio for development. I can go ahead and scroll over there to Visual Studio. The other thing I can do, and this is a nice little tip trick for you if you don't know this already, is once you're in this start screen, you could just start typing the letters of the application you want. So V, I, S. So you can see Visual Studio pops up. I can hit enter, and it's going to pull up the Visual Studio beta. And I'm going to open up a solution that I created earlier called the scripted solution. While that's loading up, I want to explain that there's three projects in there. The first one is a blank script application. We're going to start from scratch, so to speak, and just build something simple. Then the other two are other examples that we can touch on, maybe some of the more intense features, and just see how they've already been implemented and show how they're demoed. So here's my blank script. And what this means is this. If I wanted to get started, I can go File, New, File, New Project. And I'm not going to complete this, but you'll notice that within this dialog box that JavaScript has Windows Metro style. And those are my flavors for project types. And my blank script application is the first one, the blank application. The tweet screen application I'll show you in a moment is more of an example of this navigation application. And then there's a recipe one that's using the grid application. But we're going to start first with the blank application, so I'll go ahead and close that. And we're in the default HTML page. So the first thing that I want to talk about is, you know, what is it that we're building? Why are we using JavaScript? Why are we using HTML? Myth number one, is there actually a site being built or an app being built? It's definitely an application. It's an application designed to run, a Metro-style application designed to run in Windows 8. It is not using any crazy ActiveX controls. It's not actually a browser hidden in something and rendering it. It's a full-blown application. So why JavaScript and HTML then? Well, it's to leverage the skill set you probably have in HTML, JavaScript, and CSS3. And so that's what I wanted to do first, was really zero in on that. How can you benefit from using the things you already know? And then we'll start to graft in the things that you could use or leverage on the system. So I thought we'd create a simple know-it-all type of an application. You ask a question, it provides an answer. And I want to show what are some of the things that we can do that we already know. What are the rules, so to speak? So I'm going to create a simple div tag. And I'm going to give it a class that equals content. And within the content div of this particular page, and notice that it looks just like a normal HTML page. And that's a positive, meaning it should feel comfortable for us to continue to develop this HTML source like we normally do. I want to create a title, so I'll create an H1 tag for that, and the class is going to equal title. Then in order to have a little fun and show off some of the styling features, for each word in the title, I'm going to put it inside of a span. We'll have a class as well, and the class is going to be title word. And then inside of here, I'll say no. I'll do a control C here, and then control V again, so I can just duplicate the line below. It, and then control V again. Actually, this will be it, and this will be all. So I have my title done, know-it-all. Now below that title, I want to introduce some other things that we should be comfortable with, such as a span. I'm going to say that the span is, let's just put that on the next line. Span tag is going to use a class called label. And of course, when we think of class attributes within HTML, we're thinking usually of a corresponding cascading style sheet or CSS that would maintain some kind of definition for that for styling purposes. So we're going to get to that in a moment. But I'm going to just ask the question, what is it you seek? Now, that lends us to the very next thing, and that would be interactions with the end user. And we do this with inputs. So I'm going to use an input. The type is going to be something that is classic, and that's text. But before I just choose that, let me see if I can be quicker on the draw on that. Type equals, there we go. You'll notice that email is there, and the date time. So this is an HTML5 document, which means that we have the HTML5 features, the new tags, the new input types. So if I wanted to introduce some validation into my HTML, I can. But I'm going to make this simple. I'm just going to say type equals text. And maybe I'll add an inline style that says that my width is going to equal, 360px. And then something else that would benefit me here would be an ID that says this is going to be the question. So I can reference this later in script. And I want to set an autofocus. And I'll go ahead and close that input tag. So now that I have the label and the text box, I would need a way for them to trigger or submit their question. So I'm going to create a button tag for that. And if the thought process here might be, I haven't seen anything new yet, that's kind of the point. Because you should feel good that so far it feels like you're creating just a simple web application, even though it is actually an app. I'll say that the button's text is get answer. And then once we have something, what do we do there? Well, I'm just going to create a div with an ID that is answer. And what that's going to do is be a placeholder for where we'd want to put some content to put the answer. So far, very simple. We haven't even really introduced anything different. Although, to be fair, if I go back to the header section, there are some links that were already here when I created the blank script. So this CSS and these two JavaScript files are known as WinJS references. So they're already available in the operating system, and we're just leveraging them. But these other ones here are local to me or local to my project, and these are this would be a CSS and a JS file that I control. The reason why I have a comment here, something new, is that when we get to script, I'd like to introduce our own script file and then demonstrate how you can start coding that way. But I wonder what this would look like right now. So I'm going to go ahead and run this. I'll hit local machine for deployment. So it's not only building the project, it's also deploying it to the to my desktop, and it's saying know-it-all, what is it you seek, you know, get your answer. Of course, I can type some stuff in here and click get answer, but nothing's going to happen. All I'm getting are some visuals from that page. So where does it get interesting? Well, if we look at it this way, so far what we've done is we could say we've decided what content is going to go into the application. We just haven't decided how it's going to look and how it's going to behave. So the next portion of this, I'd like to start getting into the CSS side of things. If I expand this blank script and go to the default CSS, this is what it looks like to begin with. So it's doing nothing. However, those at media screen definitions, which are media queries, do give us a hint of a nice feature we can have. You see, when we're in a Windows 8 application, we have the ability to see the application through different types of screens or layouts. So for example, if I'm in full screen and I wanted to do something special for full screen landscape, I can put some additional CSS definitions in here. Filled would mean if I have something snapped on one side of the screen, but I'm filled on the other side, that would be filled mode. Snapped is if we're snapped on either to the left or the right. A demonstration of that would be simply if right now if I hit the Windows key dot on my keyboard, what it did is it just took my entire desktop and snapped it over to one side. And if I hit Windows key dot again, it just snapped it on the other side. And then it brings it back to full screen mode. So we have an opportunity to determine how we want our applications to be styled differently if we're in one of those different layouts. But I want to do some simple stuff right here. For example, let's just focus on the fact right now that what we want to do is just prove that we have a connection to this CSS and just do something simple. So I'm going to add .content, the class, and I'll just show real quickly that in the default HTML, that is referring to this outer div. Now, going back to the CSS, what I'd like to do with that content is introduce some padding. So I want to introduce padding to the left, and I want that to be 120 pixels. And I also want to introduce some padding from the top, and I want that to be about 44 pixels. What's the point of doing this? Well, when I ran the application before, everything was snug right in that upper left-hand corner. But to follow Metro design principles, we actually want it to be across from the left side of the screen about 120 pixels and down 100 to the baseline of the font. So if you subtract 100 from 44, you understand how big that default title font is, and that's how I get to that number of 44 pixels. So if I want to see how this looks, I can go ahead and save everything and debug it once again. Now it's over on this side like the other applications are designed to be at that area. Okay? Now what? Returning to Visual Studio, I want to add just a little bit of pizzazz, so I'll go and add a definition for the title. So the title was a class on the H1 that was inside of the HTML, And I'll just add some color. Color, let's say FFD800. I'll go ahead and run this again to see what my change looks like. And we could see that the color has been changed. But I wonder if you notice that every time we're doing this, we're making a change to some style definition, I'm having to rerun to look, you know, make a change, go run it again, make a change. Well, the bigger this gets, the more frustrating that might be. So even if you're primarily a developer and not a designer, I want to showcase how and why you might be interested in using Expression Blend. See, again, every time I want to see a change, I have to redeploy. If I right-click my project and say open in Expression Blend, which is what I'm going to do, this is going to take my solution, open it in Expression Blend, and allow me to take the same exact code files that I'm working with, but use it in a different kind of environment that might be more suitable, especially when you're in the front-end design aspect of the application. So it's loading the designer right now, and you know, I can barely see the code, so I can scroll up like this. However, I'll let you know a keyboard shortcut that's handy within Expression Blend is Control Zero. What that does is it puts the entire designer and fills it to the capacity of whatever screen you have available. So I have everything is showing right here. Now, if I were to go to the CSS and double-click that, I still have this, it's the same file we've been working with, but the benefit that I have here is that I can enter in a change. Let's say I want to add a text shadow. And I want that text shadow to be, let's say, 2 pixels by 2 pixels by 8 pixel, and we'll make it white. So basically, 2 pixels down, 2 pixels to the right, and add a blur effect of 8 pixels and make it white. If I save that, I'll do Control S, go back to the default, you'll see that that effect took place. I didn't have to rerun in everything, it was just there. And where this gets interesting is if I go back to the CSS, and let's say now I want to add to the title word. Remember, that was each word inside of the title. Another class definition. And I want to add a different kind of text shadow. So text shadow. If I make it 0, 0, but then add, let's say, 8px by 8px, and then a completely different other color, such as, well, 8's on my mind, 8, 8, 8, 8, FF. Looking at the code within Expression Blend, what this does is it says, I don't want there to be a shadow in a particular direction, but create a blur effect, a strong one in all directions. And this will only happen, or this will happen for each of the title words, but what I want to do is add a hover here. So if I happen to hover over the title word, that's when the actual effect comes into play. The key thing that I want to focus on before I go back over to the HTML to look at it is that nothing so far is really anything different than what we should know. It's the ability to leverage that skill set and capitalize on it right within the environment. So if you are a strong HTML or JavaScript or CSS developer, you should be seeing that, hey, he's not showing me anything different. That's kind of the point. Once again, we're not really having to do much different than what we are familiar with. So I have the hover there. Now, you'll notice if I hover it over here, well, it's not showing me the effect. But within Expression Blend, the nice thing that we have is the ability for us to go into what's called interactive mode. I'm going to hit F4 on my keyboard, which is going to make it full screen, Control-0 to put it back into place, and then Control-Alt-I. Again, Control-Alt-I is a keyboard shortcut for interactive mode, which means right now if I do hover over any of these words, I'm going to get the instant visual feedback, but I'm not having to run this program again and again and again. So for those of you who have never really experienced Blend before, this would be the reason why you might want to do it. Now, you'll notice if I go back over into Visual Studio, I get this prompt that says there's been some changes. Do you want to basically sync up and get those changes now? I'll say yes to all. Everything I added in Blend is now in this project. And if I go back again over here, I can shut this down. I'm going to work out of Visual Studio for the rest of this. But if I was in that interactive, I really want to see the design and I want to play around with the design and not rerun the application over and over again, I would stay in Blend for me to do that. Blend has, of course, a lot more features, but due to the scope of this webcast, we've got to keep things on a specific path. I want to add some other style definitions. For example, we had a label, and maybe in the label, I just want to add what the width would be. 120px. I noticed also that with regard to our answer, I want to make sure that the answer really stands out. So the answer was an ID. So I'll use the pound answer. And within there, I'm going to add some padding for it. I'll make it 100px by 0, 100px. Zero again. I'll make the font size something that we can really see. So the answer is obvious, like 100px. And I'm also going to, I'll take this text shadow up here. I'll bring it down here. But what I want to do is just make it slightly different, maybe a little bit more obvious, like 44 by 44. And maybe reverse the coloring here. One other definition I want to add for some future possibilities is if I have an image tag, maybe I'll make sure that the border radius for that image tag is going to be, make it so it's rounded. So one quick line here means that the image will have a rounded corner to it by that radius. I'm going to save all of that. Now, what's it going to look like if I run it? I just clicked on the local machine debug. I could see that some things have been put into place. Once again, if I were to click on get answer, I don't have any behavior associated with it, but I do have that nice glow effect hovering over the title words, and I have the appropriate position or alignment here or layout for this app. So, we've discussed two things that we should already know, HTML and CSS. Now we're going to start getting into the behavior, how to get to the coding for this. And the benefit here is we'll start with a blank script. So I'm going to go to this JS file, and I'm going to add a new item. I'm going to choose a JavaScript file, and I'll just keep the default name of script.js. I'm going to add that in there. Now, I could have, if I wanted to, I could have gone into the default HTML, and I could have added a script tag in here, and also add a JavaScript to this like I would normally. However, I'm going to start with a blank file so that we can talk about a couple things you might want to know when you're coding for a JavaScript language app for creating Metro-style apps. The first thing is, and you're probably aware of it, you've seen it in other third-party JavaScript files, or you've probably seen it in some of your own JavaScript stuff, but in the event you haven't, I'm going to talk about an immediate function. An immediate function is one that gets executed right away. And so I'll just show you what the syntax for it looks like. Easy way to create one. Open and close parentheses, open and close parentheses. So what I've done so far is I've just created two parentheses right next to each other with the semicolon. Then putting the cursor inside of the first one, I'll execute the function code snippet. So if I tab here, tab again, backspace, and hit enter, I'm now inside of an immediate function. Notice it has no name. I don't have to call the function for it to execute. It simply executes in the order by which it was put onto the page, which we haven't done yet, but we will shortly. And so within this immediate function, what can I do? Well, I can start to create other functions. So I'm going to create a function right now. Let me control Z that. Did that in the wrong area, right here. I'll call this a get duped. I'm going to put a copy. I think I know what's going on. Just a moment. I'm going to put a copy argument here. A copy argument here. And now, let me make sure I spell everything correctly. Sorry for the typos I had. I just had setting on my keyboard that was incorrect. So in my getDuped function, notice that I'm passing in two arguments that are the same name. That should look wrong to you. And yet Visual Studio at this time is not reporting that anything is wrong. That's why you're probably going to see more often in code samples and as we move forward, and even some of the default JavaScript files that ship with the project, this string that precedes things within an immediate function. Use strict. Now I want you to observe that there is now right here a red squiggly underneath that second copy. So the benefit of the use strict declaration as a string, preceding all your stuff, is that it's going to now invoke within Visual Studio the ability to report these kind of odd behaviors, because as we know, JavaScript is not a strongly typed language, but we want to get the benefit as much as possible of preventing any kind of silly syntax error. So if you see that line there, of course it reports a lot more violations, but I wanted to give you an example of one of those violations. So I'll erase that function. And now, if we think about it, the main objective here for this the code that we're going to be writing is to respond to the buttons when it gets clicked. We want to be able to provide an answer. So that's what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to say I really want to get the answer. So function get answer. And I'll pass in an argument there in the event that there is, in the future, I want to respond to any kind of event type of an argument. But for now, what I want to do is say var q equals, And Q for me represents the question that's being asked. I want to get access to that item on the page. I'm going to say document dot select, or query selector, excuse me. And inside of here, I can use pound question, which is going to refer to the ID of that element on this page. I also want to do the same thing for the answer, since it's the placeholder. So the document.query selector. And it's going to be the answer, like so. So what Q and A represent here are the actual elements that are on the page. Not the content in them, but the entire element, the DOM element. Now, what would I want to do from here? I'd like to process the question. And in fact, let me do that in another function that we'll call from this function. So function process question. And I'll pass in the Q and the A elements into this function so that I can access their content and information in order for me to provide what the answer is going to be. Now, A, if I were to set its text content to something like text content equals webcast, or MSDN webcast, just to show how this works, then down below, I would need to go ahead and call it. So process question. You could see that the process question on the screen is giving me some IntelliSense. I just wrote it, but it's showing me how I can call it. So I'll go ahead and take advantage of that process question. But I'm going to deliberately forget to put the arguments in there for now. I will save this, and I will attempt to run. Now, I know there's several steps that I've skipped. And the whole point of this is to show that they're skipped. See, no matter what I put in here, I'm not going to get any change in behavior. That's because, first of all, how does this button know down here, the submit question, to execute one of those functions? Well, one way that I can do that is say onClick equals. And now I can provide the function name here. So I'm thinking, oh, I want it to call getAnswer, like so. And that sounds good, but the challenge here is going to be, if I do it this way, it's going to prove, and I won't run it again just to show you, but it's going to prove that process or this getAnswer was not accessible because it was inside of this immediate function. If you have any .NET background, being inside of this immediate function and declaring functions in here is kind of like creating a class, and inside of that class creating functions that were private, not accessible on the outside. So that's how these are right now. So what could I do if I actually want to make this getAnswer public so that it could be called from the script? This is when we are going to introduce the very first thing that's different than what you might be doing in the web world. And that's using the WinJS namespace. And with WinJS, I'm going to say namespace define. And inside of here, I'll say blank script is the name of my namespace. Now, what I add next is going to be a JSON format style of the actual functions that are going to be exposed. So in this example, I would say get answer points to get answer. Really, that's simple. And then close the method like so. If I save that, what that means is I can now access through this namespace this getAnswer function. I wouldn't be able to get processQuestion, but I'd be able to get getAnswer. However, getAnswer calls processQuestion, and so that's a level of indirection to that method, data encapsulation. So I'll go back over to this HTML page, and I'm going to type in blank script dot getAnswer. But for all of this to work, I actually needed to tie in the something new here. And I'll do that by just copying this line, which is the reference to the default. And I'm going to add a blank, or no, the script, excuse me, script.js file here. So I will save everything. I am going to run it again, but please note that I intentionally forgot to put the arguments here because I want to showcase a feature within Visual Studio. So let me do that now. I'll just run this. I'll put in meaning of life. I'll try to get the answer. And now I'm getting an unhandled exception. Basically, what it's saying is I'm trying to use a property, but the object is null. So that's a problem. So I'll go ahead and break here. And one of the reasons why I want to do that is I wanted to showcase what the DOM Explorer is. The DOM Explorer allows us to investigate the actual content that's on the screen live through the actual, we're seeing what's truly being quote-unquote rendered or used within this application. This will become interesting later when we start to see that our answer will get filled or populated with data. So that's what the DOM Explorer is. I'll go ahead and stop debugging. Of course, another thing I could do is I could put a breakpoint right here and then investigate and examine what were Q&A. If I were to do that, I'd find out, there's nothing in them because I forgot to pass them in here. So if I put Q&A here, now I'm taking those elements, putting them in my process question, and now my text content should be MSDN webcast. Let's see what that looks like. I'll go ahead and run it again. I have my breakpoint in place, life, get the answer. I can hover over my queue. I can start to see all the information about this particular element, same with the A. So very beneficial and easy. All the nice debugging features of Visual Studio are here for web development, for our JavaScript development. Now, if I continue on with this, it's going to take me back, and there we go. It says, yes, we are in an MSDN webcast. So let's talk about what we've done. Remember, this should be very familiar to you. In our default page, we added the script. The script is calling a function through a namespace called blank script. That was made available to us because we created a namespace definition here. We said we wanted to expose the get answer, and we did. It called an internal or private function called process question, and it put that content on the screen. So where do we go from here? Well, one of the things that you should know is that creating your own namespaces or creating these immediate functions and exposing these kind of things is your way to create your own internal API for your application. Remember, I can't call process question right now because it's not accessible outside of this namespace definition. If I want to play around, I can prove a point. Instead of calling just process question from within here, how about if I call app.processQuestion? See, where did this namespace come from? Well, I told you at the beginning that this was a blank script project. It was brand new. But I slightly deceived you. Somewhere hidden in this project, I did create another script with a namespace of app. I defined it just like this, except put the word app here, and I created my own process question. I'll show you that code in a moment, but let's see by just changing that namespace how our application now behaves differently. So I'll click on the local machine for debugging. What is it I seek? Well, maybe I want to know, what is a cool Twitter hash? We'll get the answer. Okay, so there you go. That might be a Twitter hash that you'd want to use during this MSDN webcast. If you're tweeting at all, #win8appdev. More importantly, what does my boss do all day? Sometimes I never know. He seems to be pretty busy. Then I get the answer. Don't! Well, there's my boss, Mr. Scott Kerfoot, and it reveals what he truly does in California every day. So how did that happen? How was I able to make this possible? Well, this app definition here was actually created in the default JS file. I did it at the bottom here. I created that definition for that namespace to be app. And I just changed the rules and said, I want my process question to do this instead. So through a little regex magic, I basically said, if you find the word boss, then go ahead and show his picture. Otherwise, show the Win8 app dev. It was pretty much that simple. And I'm just using typical JavaScript. And I think that's really important. Well, let's dive now into how we can implement a specific feature for Windows 8. You should feel comfortable that your current skill set with HTML, CSS, and JavaScript can be easily leveraged here. Where can we do some stuff that's different? So one of the things that we can do is add an application command bar. And what I mean by that is this is going to be something completely different from what we're visually seeing on the screen, but using a feature that's going to be in most of the Windows 8 Metro style apps. So I'm going to create a div. I'm going to say the ID equals app bar. And I also want to make use this data win control attribute. So this is starting to look a little different. This is our way of saying, let's treat this div like a control. And specifically, we're going to make the app bar control. Now, I want to add another button in this example with a data win control. So within this app bar, I'm going to have an app bar command. And then I want to utilize the data win options attribute to specify the properties and the behavior of this particular button. So I'll do this with JSON style format. I'll say that the ID is going to equal, let's say, hello. And we'll say that the label will also be hello. So hello world type. In fact, I'll just put hello world there. And its section, you know, what's the context here? How is it involved? Well, I'm going to say global. I also want to include what icon is going to get used. Now, this is where it gets interesting. The icon is going to be pointing to a symbol that's already on this machine. So this is the syntax for it, ampersand hash XE12B semicolon. Now, how would I know that? Well, I'm going to show you a little tip trick here that you're going to want to know for your MetroStyle apps. When we're referencing icons like this, you can hit the start screen, type C-H-A-R for character map, select it, and now if I go in here and choose the Sago UI symbol and scroll down, there are a ton of different symbols or icons that are going to be installed on all of the Windows 8 operating systems. And this bad boy right here, the E12 that I just referenced, is the one that I'm going to be using. So again, you just hit start, type C-H-A-R for character map. I have my icon there. It's ready to roll. So let's just see what this looks like visually on the screen if I run this. I'll save everything and run it again. If I use the keyboard shortcut of Windows key Z, as in zebra, it pulls up the command bar. And this is what I'm looking at here, is this hello world. And it's using that icon that I had specified through the character map. Of course, if I go back to it and press on it, nothing happens. So I want to add some behavior to that. I'll do that quickly. And I'm going to go back into my script file and show how I can expose another function, a function like show message. And inside of show message, I'll put something in here like a start at the beginning there, var mesh, like mbox, equals new Windows. So we're getting into a different API here. Windows.ui.popups.messageDialog. And I can place in here, you know, hello Metro. Now, this would be different than using alert in JavaScript. So when we talk about the things you can do and not do, within a Windows 8 Metro app, you do not use alert, but you can use this message box or this message dialog. And for me to show it, I'd say mbox.showAsync. So it's going to show on the screen when we click the button. Now, for me to expose that, I'm going to add a comma here and say show message, colon, show message. So it's now going to be exposed. Save that. Go over to the default page, and now I can add another comma here and say on click equals, whoops, not equals, colon, and it's the blank script dot. And I'm not getting IntelliSense in here, but I'll just put show message. And that should complete that. I'll go ahead and run this again. When I do Windows key Z as in zebra, I see my hello world. And this is how we see the message dialog box appear on the screen. It shows us the hello Metro, and I can go ahead now and close that. So I'll do that. Well, covered what would appear to be the basics, but some of the foundational things you would need to know if you were going to start coding for Metro apps. The three main things we've considered so far is use your HTML source like you would, use your CSS like you would. When it comes into your JavaScript, you're going to code your JavaScript probably like you normally would. But you're going to have the ability to take advantage of some of the features of Windows 8 development, such as the WinJS namespace for certain behaviors, as well as the Windows namespace, which drives down and gives us other features that we can leverage within the application. There is a lot of stuff there. So instead of hand typing a lot of this, I just want to show you an example of where it could go. For example, in some of the labs that we've done across the U.S. For the developer evangelism team, we have had this Contoso cookbook as a lab that you could do. And I want to showcase what that looks like. So the splash screen popped up. That can be managed in your application manifest. We could see that we have the appropriate spacing across and down that we talked about earlier. These are being data bound to an Azure service that's returning JSON style data for all these images and for the data in here. If I were to hit Windows key dot on my keyboard, you'll notice that when I'm in this view, the snap view, it changed the way that the data looks. And of course, when I bring it back, all this was done through those media queries that we saw earlier in that CSS. If I were to hold the control key down and toggle my mouse wheel, that's going to take me to what's called semantic zoom. So that means that I can go into the app and say, you know what, if someone wants to see all that content shrunk down, well, this is what we did in our semantic zoom in order to get it that way. If I wanted to do a search, I could go to my charms, which is Windows key C, and I said, I'd like to do a search. You'll notice that my Contoso cookbook app is already selected, and I can say, do we have anything Italian, and hit enter. This takes me to the search page where it says, yes, we've got some lasagna. Of course, I can click on that, and it takes me to that particular page. So some examples of things you can implement. That entire cookbook was written in HTML, JavaScript, CSS. And another one that I wanted to show quickly is the tweet screen. Let me go ahead and change that again. The tweet screen, I'll show you the code, a simple piece of code in here. This is the app.js that I created that allows me to do stuff like, hey, on settings, or this is a way to say this is an event handler. When we're going to invoke the settings for this application, what function would you like me to call? Well, here's the function. I'm going to say I would like the name tweaks to appear in the settings page, and I want you to go to the tweaks.html page and load that when someone wants to see the settings, invoking it through the settings charm when the app is running. And then go ahead and fly out and populate the event object, which was provided through the operating system. So let me just show that real quick. I'll run it. And the whole point of this app is it goes out and does a search for anyone who happened to use that #Win8 app dev. If you happen to have tweeted with it, then you might see your stuff pop up here. But if I want to go to the settings, Windows key I is going to show that. And if I hover over this, you'll see that my tweaks is where it shows in my settings. That was what you saw populated in the JavaScript code. I'll hit that again, Windows key I, and I'll click on tweaks. And what this allows me to do is say, is there another search term you'd rather search on other than Win8 app dev? So of course I can change that here, save tweaks, and modify what I want to see on my tweet screen. I was using this at some live events during lunch and so forth so people can see their stuff as the event was unfolding. Well, we're almost running out of time. I just want to come back and make something really clear about what you need to know about coding for HTML or coding with HTML to do your metro-style apps. And that is, don't feel like you have to learn a ton of new things. The new things are in some of the API calls, but embrace the fact that you already know how to do HTML. You already know how to do CSS. You probably already know how to do JavaScript. Just learn what you would have to change or some of the new calls that you'd have to make. But embrace the fact that you know so much already. Now, within a short period of time, couldn't cover all the features I'd love to have covered with you, but the key you also should know is that the main reason why we have this available, that Microsoft has made available JavaScript coding for metro-style apps, is so that you can take advantage of that skill set. Some have asked, well, was it so that I can take my website out there and convert it over into an app? Well, you might be able to take some of those resources and do a degree of conversion, but the primary reason was to take advantage of your skill set, so that you can leverage that and continue to leverage that in either the web or in the app world. Another question that gets asked quite a bit is, could I use my third-party libraries that I love in JavaScript? For the most part, the answer is yes. But keep in mind this, too. Third-party JavaScript files, if their main purpose is to make your websites cross-browser friendly, well, that's not an issue here. We're not coding to multiple browsers here. We're just coding to an app. So sometimes those third-party JavaScript files are going to represent some bloat where it's not necessary in our Windows 8 applications because we're not worried about browser issues. In fact, that makes the whole experience much more enjoyable when you're coding with JavaScript and you don't have to worry about all the browser issues. You're just creating an app. So I'll go ahead and shut down Visual Studio. And with regard to where you can go from here, I want to leave some of these resources on the screen for a moment. Because we're embracing Windows 8 and we're also embracing the possibilities of how to develop for Windows 8, we have I have some resources here on how you can take advantage of some HTML5 skill sets, some CSS3 skill sets. If you want to see what upcoming events there are that are related to Windows 8 or HTML5 or CSS3, that's what those first three bit.ly links are to. If you want to keep in touch with me through Twitter, you can do so through the Palermo4 alias. And, of course, my website is palermo4.com. And I think we might have time for maybe a question. Let me go check on that. Let's see. Do you still need, I think one of the questions is do you still need a developer token to post your app to the marketplace? The answer is at this time, absolutely. And if that's something you're interested in, please reach out to me. Anyone who thinks they have a Windows 8 app idea and you want to get it in the store right away, please reach out to me. Reach out to me through Twitter. Send a message and I'll see that. If you're interested in a token, I'd be happy to help you out with that process. There is a process for it, of course, but I can be a gateway for you to get to that Windows 8 token. I think that's all I have time for. So I'll go ahead and say thank you very much for your time today. And I hope you keep in touch. And I think it's been an awesome experience. And I hope if you have any other questions, go ahead and go to the Windows.com website and do your search for metro-style application development with JavaScript. Take care. Have a great day.